Good morning, everyone. Welcome to this week's edition of Thursday in the Doghouse. I'm your host, Rainey Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer. As always, we've prepared a show for you today that's going to help make you more aware of your dog's special needs. My guest today is Dr. Michael Dim. Dr. Dim offers progressive conventional medicine along with holistic and homeopathic treatment options for our pets. I'll be talking to Dr. Dim this morning primarily about diabetes in dogs, so I hope you'll be able to listen to the entire show. If you can't, just go on my website, www.jerseydogtrainer.com, and click on the page marked Rainey's Radio Show. You'll see a list of links for all the shows we've done so far. Today's program should be up by tomorrow, so you can hear this interview between me and Dr. Dim in its entirety. Before we talk to Dr. Dim, please let me tell you what services I offer as a professional dog trainer in the South Jersey area. Is your dog always in the doghouse? Does he greet people by jumping all over them? Does she chew your shoes and steal your undies? Guess what? Your dog needs training. Hi, I'm Rainey Primeza, the Jersey Dog Trainer, and I train dogs using only positive-based methods. My services include private training right in your own home. I also offer group puppy kindergarten classes starting at 8 weeks of age and group classes for adolescent and adult dogs beginning at 5 months of age. All group classes are held at Dog Days Camp for Canines, 23 West Main Street, Marlton, New Jersey. For more information, please contact me at 609-280-9338. We're on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Again, that's 609-280-9338. We're on the web at www.jerseydogtrainer.com. Good morning, Dr. Dim. Thank you so much for joining us again in the doghouse. I always appreciate your returning here and educating us about the health of our pets.
Good morning, Rainey. It's great to be here.
Yeah. Listen, I wanted to talk to you about diabetes because I know a lot of dogs and I hear about a lot of dogs that wind up developing this disease. And I don't think too many people realize that dogs can get lots of diseases that humans do.
That's right. You know, animals can get all sorts of different organ diseases and hormonal diseases just like us.
That's right. How common is it for dogs to develop diabetes?
I would say it's less than 1% of the dog population, but diabetes itself is probably the second most common hormonal disease seen in dogs today.
Okay.
And, you know, it's usually seen in, you know, middle-aged and older dogs, typically.
It's very rare for a young dog to get it, like a dog that might be two or three years old.
Well, I've seen a couple of cases over the years in animals under a year that have more of a juvenile onset of it, just like seen in human children. In those cases, it's more of a genetic problem, which, you know, it manifests at a young age. But more typically, no, it's typically seen in the middle-aged to older dog.
All right. And are there any specific breeds that you're aware of that would develop this disease more than others?
There are some breeds that are more predisposed. When I think of diabetes, I'd say probably the ones that come to my mind as the most common ones I see in clinical practice would be breeds like Schnauzers and Dachshunds, and I would throw, let's say, Westies in that group. They're probably the breeds I think of the most commonly. You know, a lot of the smaller toy breeds, you know, it's seen in the bigger breeds as well, such as Goldens and Labs. But I would say the first few that I mentioned are probably the most common. And then there's actually a genetic form of it that's been documented in Keyshounds and Samoyeds, actually.
Really? Is it genetic because they just don't breed it out because the breeders aren't being careful enough?
I don't know the exact genetics of it. I think what veterinary geneticists have studied by pedigree analysis is that there is some sort of genetic tendency or trait seen in those two breeds, whereas the other breeds, we believe there's a genetic basis, but they're more confident that there's a, you know, that they've actually seen some sort of the definitive genetic link in those two breeds.
Okay. What about the difference between males and females? Would you find this more in females than more often in females than males?
Typically, most of the hormonal diseases in dogs, just like in human women, usually are seen more commonly in female dogs, although I do have plenty of male diabetic patients that I've seen over the years.
Mm-hmm.
And that probably relates to, of course, fluctuation in hormonal levels that females and women typically go through, that female dogs and women typically will go through. Yeah, I would say in general it's a little bit more common in females, yes.
Okay. Are there different types of this disease as there are in humans? You mentioned that you do see some of the juvenile diabetes. So what are the types that are more common for dogs?
Well, I mean, you know, in humans there's this, you know, what's labeled type 1 and type 2 based upon whether a person is producing enough insulin or whether they have a problem with the body utilizing insulin. And that's a different type of diabetes. In other words, where the body makes enough insulin but the cells can't process the insulin, so that the body then is in essence diabetic. In dogs, we see the type that's most common where they don't produce enough insulin. So that's usually called type 2 diabetes, where they're called insulin-dependent diabetics.
Okay.
And in that case, they usually need, you know, supplemental insulin by injection. Rather than with humans, you can sometimes get by with oral pills and just dietary modification to help with managing diabetes. In dogs, more typically, once the disease is diagnosed, usually you need injectable medication.
So how is that done? I mean, does the owner have to bring the dog to the vet every day, or do they have
to... Well, once it's diagnosed, typically right there in the office, depending upon how sick the animal is, if it's an animal that's still eating and wagging its tail but just has the symptoms of diabetes and is diagnosed by a blood and urine test in the office, documenting a high blood sugar and a high urine sugar, what happens then is typically, and it varies according to practice, but most veterinarians will typically then show owners right there in the exam room how to administer insulin with very, very small syringes. It's very, very easy to do. The needles are very tiny. They don't hurt. And the insulin is usually given clean out twice a day with most insulin types. And then the animal sent home and then brought back in a week or two later, where usually, a series of blood sugars is done in the office to document whether the animal's sugar is under control. So it's done typically on an outpatient basis in those animals that aren't sick.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in those animals that come in that have a more severe form of diabetes that's been undiagnosed for, you know, a long period of time, and the animal has stopped eating and or is vomiting, those particular animals develop certain poisons in their bloodstream called ketones. Those particular patients actually need to be hospitalized for several days, and they can actually be intensive patients that are, you know, that usually can be brought under control, but usually several days in the hospital and injectable antibiotics for secondary infections, and big expenses needed in those cases. That's why it's important to be on top of the signs of diabetes so that the diagnosis can be made early.
Okay. I know in humans, very often, they don't feel very well when they have diabetes, even when they are taking their medication, and it's just not a very pleasant disease to have.
No.
I would imagine that dogs would feel the same way.
Yeah, I mean, they show certain symptoms that, you know, usually, are pretty, you know, are strong symptoms that are typically seen in people. The most common ones being that they'll start drinking and urinating excessive amounts of water, drinking and urinating excessive amounts, and then that is usually accompanied by weight loss. So those three symptoms together, excessive thirst, excessive urination, and weight loss, are the three cardinal symptoms of diabetes. Now, also, that can be a sign of, you know, a kidney or a liver problem as well, which is why if an animal has those sorts of symptoms and they're going on for any period of time, that they go to the veterinarian and actually have blood work and urine done so that, you know, the appropriate diagnosis and treatment plan can be made.
What surprised me when I was doing a little research on this subject is that, and you just mentioned it, one of the symptoms is weight loss. I thought that an overweight dog, just like overweight people, develop diabetes. So I was surprised to see that a symptom would be weight loss.
Well, the problem is, again, because the most common form, I think a lot of these dogs start out being overweight and obese, and being overweight is a risk factor for diabetes. But once you become diabetic, and again, the form seen in the dog is where they don't produce insulin. Insulin is the hormone our bodies need to utilize the nutrients and food we take into the bodies. If an overweight dog who develops insulin-dependent diabetes or stops making insulin, what happens then is that the body, is in essence, goes into almost like a state of starvation. Even though the animal might be eating a lot or drinking or urinating a lot, the body can't utilize nutrients, and therefore, because of the lack of insulin, which is necessary for that, and therefore animals, you know, most typically will be losing, you know, weight, sometimes dramatic amounts of weight.
Mm-hmm.
So it's actually, you know, different, whereas in people, the type of diabetes often in overweight people where the cells just can't use the insulin. That form of diabetes is rare in dogs. It's more when they stop making the insulin and therefore they go into like a state of starvation where their body can't utilize any of the nutrients they take in. So they, you know, most of these dogs are losing vast amounts of weight.
Wow. Also in people, if they don't get their insulin medication or if their blood sugar goes up, they can have diabetic seizures. Isn't that correct? And would that happen?
Yep.
Would that happen to dogs also?
Oh yeah. Well, when the sugar goes up, there's all sorts of different biochemical changes that occur in the body. Blood electrolytes go off. All the chemistry of the blood changes, so that certainly the different pressures go up in the nervous system. And yeah, you can definitely lead to, you know, toxicity. Toxins develop in the bloodstream from secondary bacterial infections, and all these different what are called biochemical changes lead to, you know, can lead to behavioral changes, can lead to, like you said, seizures. And, of course, you know, these animals don't feel very well, just like people who don't
right.
feel very well with the condition.
Right. That's really scary, you know, and it would be horrible. If somebody saw that their dog was drinking excessively, and I see this on my trainer's lists all the time, where it gets to be very confusing, what exactly would be considered as excessive drinking or excessive urination, especially if you just take a dog out of a shelter or rescue, and then, you know, you just notice this, you don't know what's excessive for that dog for a while.
Well,
would it be a huge amount?
I don't usually get into, well, you know, exact numbers with people. Well, if your dog's drinking more than, you know, a liter or more than a ml per pound per body weight per day, that gets a little complex. Basically, what clients will notice is that they're either, you know, if they've already had a, if it's a dog out of the pound, I really don't see them usually typically develop diabetes right away. They don't usually come, in other words, they don't usually adopt diabetic dogs. So people will get a rough idea what their dogs are drinking, who either own them for several years, because like I said, most of these are middle-aged and older dogs.
Right.
Or, you know, they'll all of a sudden notice, you know what, you know, the water bowl's empty all the time, or, you know, Fifi's drinking 50% more than she used to. I'm, you know, and she's gone to the bathroom in the house, or she can go out more frequently. So there's usually a significant, it's not just a subtle thing, there's usually a significant change in the thirst or urination, typically goes up by at least 50% in most cases.
Okay. And is it wrong, if a person sees that their dog appears to be drinking excessively, is it wrong to remove the dog's water and portion it out, or should they give their dog...
Yeah, until you go to a veterinarian and have a diagnostic workup. Yes, you don't want to do that with a dog, because the reason why they're drinking so much water is because they're dehydrated.
Mm-hmm.
And so until there are certain forms of excessive thirst and urination. In other words, there are what we call psychogenic water drinkers. In other words, animals that drink excessively as almost like a nervous habit.
Like an obsession.
But, mm-hmm. You know, until a client can bring an animal to the veterinary office and work up chronic excessive thirst and urination.
Mm-hmm.
In other words, have a full blood and urine workup to rule out not just diabetes, but other hormonal diseases like kidney disease and Cushing's disease, which is another hormonal disease we see in animals, but also another type of diabetes, which isn't a lack of insulin, but one called diabetes insipidus.
Yep.
Which is where there's a problem in the brain or at the level of the kidneys in resorption of water. So these are all different diseases that if you restrict water, you can make an animal very, very sick. So until those diseases are ruled out by a proper veterinary workup, you don't want to be restricting the water, no.
Good. Okay. Now, I'm a little bit familiar with diabetes insipidus because I had a pituitary tumor removed in 2006, and that, I was told, would have been one of the side effects of the surgery. They had to have removed the pituitary gland, which, of course, they're not going to do with dogs. But could diabetes insipidus be caused by a problem with the dog's pituitary gland? And could you help the dog if that were the case?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's a whole different, disease altogether. It's much, much less common in dogs than it is. I don't know the incidence in people, but it's much, much less common than the form of diabetes we're talking about here, which I guess we should kind of clarify. We're talking about here called diabetes mellitus, which is the form that most people are most commonly familiar with, where you don't produce insulin.
Okay.
The form you're talking about, which just uses the name diabetes as part of a totally different disease where the body either isn't producing a hormone at the level of the pituitary gland that allows the body to resorb water at the kidneys, mm-hmm. and thus the person's losing excessive water through the kidneys, mm-hmm. and therefore has to drink a lot of water, and it looks a lot like, you know, the diabetes we're talking about here with lack of insulin, but it's a different disease. As you said, you needed your pituitary gland removed. Animals, we typically don't do that. We typically use certain hormones, what are called certain types of diuretics that actually help the animal resorb water from their kidneys and therefore alleviate the symptoms, lessen the symptoms of excessive thirst and urination. But it is a totally different disease, diabetes insipidus, which is the disease you had, than the one we're talking about here.
Okay, all right. Another thing that I found in my research is that drugs like glucocorticoids and progestogens cause more risk. What are those drugs and why would they cause such a risk?
Well, start with the one that's the most common, because progestogens, well, let me just briefly mention progestogens. Progestogens are hormones, the main one being progesterone, which is part of one of the hormones produced by the ovaries, and of course in spayed females, of course you'll see very little of that, as well as progesterone is produced by the adrenal glands, which are little glands next to the kidneys. We don't really see much of a problem with progestins causing more of a risk unless you have an intact female who's going through a lot of repetitive heats. Then progesterone can certainly be a factor in either aggravating existing diabetes or playing a risk in causing diabetes, but the risk is not really understood. But the more relevant drug that you mentioned, or class of drugs, the glucocorticoids, those are the most common example of that, which most people who have dogs or know people with dogs have heard of, is prednisone or cortisone.
Mm-hmm.
And cortisone, which is used to treat all sorts of chronic diseases in veterinary medicine, from skin allergies to chronic bowel disease, such as inflammatory bowel disease, various autoimmune diseases, as well as even disc problems or back problems and joint problems. So glucocorticoids or cortisone are a big group of drugs used quite commonly in every veterinary clinic, conventional veterinary clinic, every day in practice. And short-term use of those drugs are usually okay in most animals, but in some sensitive patients, when you use those drugs either sometimes short-term, but more commonly long-term, then you do significantly increase the risk of diabetes. It actually, you know, causes insulin resistance at the level of the cells and also can cause damage to the pancreas that eventually, which is the organ that makes the insulin, and that can lead to diabetes as well.
Okay, so this leads me into another question, and I'm sure you can answer it quite well for me. You being a holistic veterinarian, would you put a dog on prednisone for long term, or would there be other methods and options that you could use for a dog that needed that?
In traditional veterinary practice, of course, like I mentioned, it's so common to use prednisone. To be honest, Rini, if it's used appropriately, and when I say appropriately, tapered to the lowest effective dose to control the condition, and the animal monitored in everyday traditional practice, monitored meaning having its blood taken periodically and urine, and it's used in low oral dose, you know, typically every other to every third day if it's a chronic condition, then most of those animals typically will do okay. I mean, in my experience in traditional practice, being more holistically oriented, of course, I'm always trying to, you know, offer other solutions to chronic allergies and bowel problems and disc disease. And there are holistic treatment options, whether they be homeopathic treatments, nutritional therapies, you know, whether it be acupuncture or chiropractic for back problems. And so there are other treatment options. However, clients who want their animals to feel better right away, and we've discussed this in other contexts, have to have a lot of patience with their itchy animal and realize that even though they want their animals to be comfortable, that the holistic treatments take a lot more time and patience. And their itchy animal's probably going to itch for a while and sometimes might even itch worse before they get better with some of the holistic treatments.
Okay. All right. That's very clear. Let's go back to being overweight for a minute. What is it about being overweight that would set the dog or cat up for developing diabetes? What is that due to the dog being overweight?
Being overweight? Well, being overweight, does I mean in general or relative to this disease?
Relative to this disease. Why would it predispose?
Well, again, it can sometimes make the cells, the body's cells, which are where we utilize all our nutrients, resistant to the effects of insulin. In other words, the receptors, which are these little channels on the cells that the insulin binds to. When an animal is overweight, these channels or receptors tend not to bind to the insulin. So in other words, the animals can become insulin resistant. Overweight dogs are much more prone to diabetes that way, or a form of diabetes where they're not, again, body's not utilizing the insulin. But also overweight dogs accumulate a lot of fat in their liver and in their pancreas. And overweight dogs, in particular, that can lead to different immune changes. And, you know, there's that term that I've used many times. Most chronic diseases in animals are due to autoimmune problems where the immune system attacks itself. And so in overweight dogs, I think they're also more prone to autoimmune diseases. And diabetes actually is a form of an autoimmune disease where the immune system starts to attack and destroys the cells that produce insulin in a large number of cases, especially the ones that aren't genetic in origin. Being overweight can lead to risk for not just this disease, but of course other back and joint problems and heart issues and all sorts of things.
Mm-hmm. Okay. The other thing that I wanted to find out, a dog that would develop diabetes, would that dog be also more prone to developing other hormonal issues like thyroid disease or something like that?
I don't think that's really well understood. There are dogs that do develop multiple hormonal disorders at some point in their life. So in other words, when a dog's diagnosed with a thyroid problem, I believe there's a certain percentage that are going to then go on and develop either adrenal gland problems or as well as potentially diabetes. I don't think anybody really has done exact research on that, but from a, again, a holistic perspective, if there is a predisposition to a hormonal problem in one part of the body, you know, such as diabetes, then sometimes I in my experience, I do see those animals more predisposed maybe at some point in the future developing problems with their thyroid or their adrenal gland. Yeah, I definitely, in my experience, think there is a more holistic global link because the whole endocrine or hormonal systems all work together. They all are intertwined. So if there's an imbalance in one and you kind of plug up that hole with insulin, sometimes the body then will manifest that weakness someplace else. You know, it's got a different name. It might have thyroid disease or Cushing's on it, or if it's a cat, an overactive thyroid called hyperthyroidism. But it's a similar autoimmune condition where an animal's, you know, weakness is just manifested, like I said, in a different organ system, and then we treat that. So in holistic medicine, we try and make the whole body healthier so that we tend not to develop these other hormonal disorders, which is one of the differences between holistic approaches and traditional treatment options.
Would diabetes be treated exactly the same way if someone brought a cat in for treatment? Would you test the cat the same way?
That would be tested the same way. Cats, though, are a little bit different without getting into too much detail. With cats, a lot of the cats, it's diet-induced. In fact, in cats, one of the major causes of diabetes is cats that are on all dry food diets, which are, you know, cats are carnivorous animals, meat eaters, and when they're on all dry food or all carbohydrate-based diets, then just like a person who eats too much processed carbohydrates, that makes us predisposed to diabetes. That's a big factor in cats, and there's a significant portion of cats where if you diagnose it early, sometimes just changing them to an all-meat diet or a homemade meat-based diet preferably, then you can actually cure the cat of the diabetes without even using insulin.
Really?
Whereas in the dog, when we diagnose diabetes in them, typically they usually, most of those animals need insulin for usually, you know, the rest of their life. I have occasionally treated diabetic dogs with homeopathy by itself if it's caught early. Again, not easy to treat, but occasionally I've been able to avoid insulin. But in the vast majority of cases in dogs, they usually do need insulin, although I will sometimes also utilize, you know, nutritional therapies and diet to help, again, improve the overall immune system, hopefully lessen the likelihood of other hormonal disorders. And so that's, again, one of the differences between what a holistically oriented vet tries to do with treatment options versus a conventional vet.
Right. Let's just talk a little bit more about the cat. Do you commonly see people bring in cats that are just totally overweight?
Absolutely. Indoor cats, they're sitting on a windowsill all day. They have dry food to nibble on throughout the day, which is the worst way we feed cats. Cats should be fed only once or twice daily, you know, twice daily typically. When we leave that dry food down for them and they nibbling on it throughout the day, that's totally against the way they evolved to eat, and it leads to weight gain, it leads to urinary crystal formation in some cats, and then eventually potential blockages and urinary tract inflammation, and then also eating all that dry food, which people think erroneously is good for their teeth, which has never been scientifically shown to be true. Those cats also are prone to, again, because of the overload of carbs, you know, diabetes, because it's just a totally unnatural way that they evolve to eat. These are meat eaters, and meat is mostly protein, fat, and water. And so feeding these felines these all-dry food diets, which a lot of people do, and a lot of vets suggest that people do, and for, you know, because we didn't get trained on this in medical school, that dry food feeding is just like poison to the feline.
Really? This is really interesting. And I'm glad that we are talking about the cats, because I'm sure that there's a lot of cat owners listening to our program today.
In fact, we often wait until a cat develops this, you know, the frustrating urinary tract diseases, which a lot of people own cats have experienced, and then we put them on an all wet food diet, or we wait till they develop diabetes, and then we say, okay, and then we've got to put them on what we call a quote unquote Catkins diet, which is a, you know, a low carb, a high protein, high meat based diet. And the bottom line is they should be on those diets in the first place so that they don't develop those conditions.
Interesting. You know? Really interesting. So cats don't do well on an all dry food diet, but dogs can, correct? I mean, do you?
They can, although I again, dogs should be more on a fresh food diet, minimally processed, again, preferably a meat based diet, you know, a wet food type diet. I would not, you know, they are not as high protein requiring as cats are.
Okay.
So, for example, a dog can be made a vegetarian, even though I'm not, you know, for that necessarily. But you can make a balanced recipe for a dog using, you know, vegetarian formulas,
right,
which are lower in protein. But with dogs and with cats, you can't do that. You can't really, even though some of the really hearty, you know, anti-meat people may disagree, but it's hard to make an appropriate vegetarian diet for a cat. With dogs, their protein needs are lower, so you can get by with more carbs than dogs, and lower protein. But, you know, there's a whole school of thought out there in feeding dogs that they shouldn't get many carbs at all, and I'm kind of in the middle of the road. I just stress more of a fresh, minimally processed diet. Dr. Pitcairn, who trained me in homeopathy, whose book was written, first edition, over 30 years ago, you know, his recipes call for carbs. The key is just feeding a fresh, minimally processed diet. And, yes, I mean, dogs, dry food, because it does have some carbs in it, is okay, although I'd rather have my clients feeding their dogs a fresh homemade-based diet, such as one of Dr. Pitcairn's recipes.
Mm-hmm. All right, so this is really interesting. So tell me, you know, I think in my experience, when I go to visit to work with a dog and then they have cats, most people free feed their cats.
Right.
There's also a lot of people that free feed their dogs. And being a dog trainer and learning all about this stuff, I'm not really crazy about seeing a dog being free fed for various reasons. But how do you feel about the common practice of free feeding versus putting food on a regimented schedule?
I think animals should be fed at certain times of day. In the wild, these are, you know, dogs are scavengers, typically just picking up whatever they can find. And cats are hunters. And sometimes, you know, hunters don't always catch a prey item. You know, if you go to the Philadelphia Zoo, one day a week, they don't even feed the big cats because they want to mimic how they, you know, exist in the wild. So, you know, allowing free feeding of these animals is evolutionarily not how their digestive tract evolved to optimally function.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yes, it is better to feed at set times a day. You know, the only exceptions I'll make to that would be if you have a very finicky diabetic dog who just won't eat very much. And in those cases, then I guess leaving some dry food down would be okay.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, with diabetes and giving insulin injections, you want to make sure their sugars don't drop too low.
Right.
But for the most part, it's best to feed animals at set times a day, you know, morning and evening. Occasionally, if somebody wanted to give, you know, a mid-afternoon snack, especially, like I said, if it's a diabetic dog and you're concerned about maybe the sugar dropping too low. But,
mm-hmm,
yeah, the free feeding is not the ideal way to feed most animals.
Dr. Dan, we only have about 2 minutes left. I really would love for you to explain to people about your private practice, your holistic practice, so that they know what you do, and also where can they contact you if they're interested in learning more about this.
To learn more about just holistic medicine in general, you can just Google my name, Dr. Michael Dim, and my website will come up on the internet. That's Michael, D-Y-M. The best way to contact me would be through phone, which is you know, my phone number is 856-629-8375. If somebody's interested, it's best to call that phone number I just mentioned.
I think you're just about the best vet in the world. I really love listening to you. You're such a source of terrific education, and I do appreciate your returning here to talk with us on the radio, and I hope that you'll be willing to come back again soon, because I think it's good for people to understand what common diseases and disorders that their dogs may get, and cats. I would prefer that our expert veterinarian on this show be you. Would you be willing to do that?
I appreciate your kind comments, and I'd be happy to, you know, come back at some point in the future.
All right. Thank you so much, Dr. Dem. I hope you have a wonderful day.
Have a great day, Rena.
Bye-bye. Thank you for listening to Thursday in the Doghouse. I hope you'll tune in again next week. I promise that we'll have another educational show for you. I hope you've been able to listen on a regular basis, because that's going to make you a much better dog owner. Have a great day, everybody.